I firmly believe that we deserve, period.
I just feel like it's important to keep saying that aloud, that this is us learning in public.
The foundation of how to not have trash politics is really just relationships, right?
So if you're not aware of how powerful you are, then how can you be using your power to bring others up?
We're giving you collective liberation. We're giving you personal healing. We're giving you millennial auntie with a mic.
You're listening to Scene, the podcast.
When I was younger, I longed for the opportunity to express myself. I really wanted to be a singer-songwriter, and I would write music, play my guitar, and dream of what it would take to be in the Songwriter Hall of Fame. I wanted to be known for something, I guess, you know, my art, for expressing my emotions, and these were emotions that I felt were deeply suppressed. I think there was a part of me that wanted my pain to be my art. At some point, I let go of that idea of becoming a songwriter or a singer, and I ended up pursuing other interests. I went to university, got my degrees, and entered the workforce in a more sort of professional capacity. It wasn't long until the work that I was doing felt like, what's even the point? You know, I felt so deeply disconnected from the work that I did, you know, for pay, and the work that I felt compelled to do, namely to tell the truth. And that's something that I've, you know, kind of wrestled with for most of my life, is just this need to tell the truth. Everywhere I turned, I felt like I had this pressure on my back to perform, to do something good enough that everyone, more and more on social media, that they would notice my brilliance, my talent, my je ne sais quoi. I think I wanted to be useful or important, but there was something there. There still is something there. And I still have that feeling, you know, especially this urge to tell the truth. I have a podcast, by the way, and also to be useful. But it's definitely changed a lot. And so have I. And so have sort of the ways that I have imagined my purpose and what I want to do while I'm here on this earth. So today I want us to talk about the notion of legacy and specifically how it's tied to collective healing and liberation. Our BIPOC of the week is Layla F. Saad, who you may know for her best-selling work, White Supremacy and Me, as well as her super amazing podcast, Good Ancestor. So please support her and check out her work. A lot of the stuff that she covers in her podcast, Good Ancestor, are specifically about how to become good ancestors for collective healing and liberation. Like, and not those words, but like they're very much woven into her work, which is like affirming, because I was kind of like, legacy, what is it? Is it just about like who I am and how people perceive me? And I really wanted to title this episode, maybe it will be titled I Was Here, and it'll be Beyonce will be the song of the week.
I was gonna be like, but is our song of the week Legacy by Jay-Z? But that's probably better. Beyonce is better. Yeah. Than Jay-Z, so.
Like, she just made an entire song called I Was Here, so I kind of just figured yes, that would be it, but could have been Jay-Z as well. But yeah, I think this topic is like scattered thoughts, a lot of reflection about, I don't know, a lot of the themes we've been talking about, like work and authority in work and power in work, and purpose and values and all of these pieces. And so thinking about it through this lens of legacy and through Layla's, you know, framing of what it means to be a good ancestor, I think I'm excited to talk about this with you and just like learn about what your takes on these ideas are. So yeah, how are you?
I'm doing well. I've been the brain fog I warned you about before we started recording. Okay,
yes. Yeah, yes. Is it hitting you right now?
It hits me every time I say a sentence that's longer than like three words. And I'm like halfway through, I'm like, what was the end of the sentence? But I'm very excited about the topic because I haven't thought a whole lot about this. It's never been something I've really settled on. I've sometimes talked about it or thought about it in passing, but I haven't given a lot of deep thought to it. And so I'm really curious as to what you've been thinking about and feeling into the topic.
Okay. So how I was thinking about this topic was like, I've had some, I think, relatively okay ideas about what legacy means, you know, like the mark that we leave behind when, because, like, you know, death is inevitable. We're all here temporarily, which in and of itself freaks me out. Like, I'm scared of dying. I'm scared of death, the concept of death. I don't want to be about it. I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to explore it. But I have to recognize and I understand the temporality of my body and of, like, my existence, right? And so there's some okay ideas that I have and I've like, held on to. And then I also realize that there's some, like, really, for lack of a better word, like, gross ideas around what legacy means. And, like, when I say gross, I mean, like, they're tied to, like, capitalism and, like, individualism and, like, colonialism. And then I've also been thinking about, and with the help of Leila Efsad and the work that she does, specifically, there's this really interesting, like, really short, like, 7-minute video that she has on YouTube called Good Ancestors or Bridges of Hope. It's from, like, December 2020. Watch it. We're drawing from that today. And all of the shit that she does is just phenomenal. But watch that specifically. In listening to her or watching that video and then reflecting a bit more on my own, I feel like there are other more transcendent and more helpful ideas of what legacy is around that concept of being a good ancestor that fit better than the kind of gross capitalistic individual colonial ideas and even some of the ideas that I had before. So I want to share what those ideas are, the okay ones, the gross ones, and then some of the ones that I think are helpful for us.
Okay, great. That's exciting because I think often part of the reason I haven't settled for too long on thoughts about this are that when I have heard people talk about it, I'm not gonna lie, I'm specifically thinking about Jay-Z. He talks about it a lot in his lyrics.
Yes, yeah.
Not just the song Legacy, but, like, it comes up at many times. And it's just always been something that never resonated with me. Like, there's a lot of talk about, like, after I'm dead, like, people will still talk about me and, like, this body of work will still hear and, like, the legend of me will still exist. And I'm kind of like, who cares? Like, why does that matter? You're dead. Like, it really doesn't matter. So already when you're talking about, you know, things around being a good ancestor and it's more about, like, ripple effects and impact and stuff, I feel like I can see some potential paths forward of how I could connect with this idea more than I have.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. I think, yeah, not gonna lie, anything that most of the things that Jay-Z offers musically will kind of seem like they touch on sort of, like, braggadociousness, bravado, which is, like, you know, part and parcel of, like, a lot of, you know, hip-hop and rap and
superhero
stuff like that.
Music
And so, exactly, superhero music. But I think, yeah, to your point, it doesn't resonate with me. And maybe it did before. Like, and I said before, like, I had some okay ideas. I think they're okay. But it was like, yeah, it was about like, what will people remember me for? Or what will people remember me as? And, you know, when I was in the depths of Christianity and, like, also feeling like, I'm going to go to hell, I was so deeply aware of, like, if I died right now, I'm going to hell. I didn't do enough good stuff. Like, I was so scared of that. And so, again, like, this kind of legacy touches on death. It has to, right? Because it's about, like, you not being there anymore. But my focus for a long time was just, yeah, focus on how people would perceive me or remember me. And then it also then, like, moved into, like, what will my mark be? Like, what will my gift to the world be? Like, what will my work have amounted to being for other people? And so, yeah, I guess some of the pieces as I grew older and kind of brushed up against, like, worth, and what work meant and, like, working. And so I remember when I was dating this dude named Kyle, my first boyfriend, my first love. Kyle, where are you? Don't come to me though. Don't reply.
It's a rhetorical question.
It's a rhetorical question. Stay away. But I remember that Kyle, whenever we would, like, you know, go out and about in the world and he would meet new people, we were, you know, dating and meeting folks together and, like, partying and whatever, people would ask him, what do you do? And I remember he would always be like, I hate that question. I think it's like the worst question ever. And I remember thinking like, who the fuck cares? Like people are just trying to be conversational. And he's like, you're a human being, not a human doing. Like, why is that like the conversation that people like, what do you do? It's like, I exist. Like he was just that kind of dude who wanted to be.
It's a corny way to say that, but he does have a point.
You know what it is. But yeah, like I think at the moment I thought like, oh, you're just being like kind of quirky and annoying, to be honest. And there was a part of me that was like, you go, baby, woo. But then now as an adult, like now I'm way more, I don't know, that resonates and I can relate to that a lot more. This idea of like who you are and like what you do in this lifetime. I just firmly believe that we are more than our jobs. Like we are more than like the actual day-to-day, you know, pieces of work that we like churn out. And I guess some of the gross ideas, like I was saying, and specifically onto this notion of like, what do you do? Mm-hmm. And how it's connected to legacy is that like, I don't know, I think capitalism steals away this part of us where we're able to like, I don't know, just exist as human beings. Like we're forced into having to like, I'm a stockbroker. I'm not, I'm a bank teller. I'm a, you know, and like your worth and the value of what you have to offer is kind of boiled down a lot of the times to like your occupation.
Yeah.
How does that make you feel?
It is so capitalist. It's also so classist, right? To box people in by their occupation. And the fact that that's often a first question, it allows, you know, some people to situate you in this like class system. And, you know, there are certain groups of people that have a lot more space and, you know, resources from which they have the privilege to choose what kind of work that they do. And so the idea that that's the most important thing about you, it's like what you do for work is going to say more about you if you have more privilege, I think, because you had more choice in that matter.
Right.
But also, yeah, it's like that is one part of our lives. And the hyper focus on it, I think, is probably the root of a lot of the other problems in our world.
Yeah, it's like valuing people for the labor that they can conjure up.
And not valuing family and not valuing like our social relations on the level that we should.
Ooh, okay, we're going to come back to like social relations in a minute. But a couple of things that you just said, yeah, I really just feel as though we're more than, you know, I don't want to make everything about my job. Even if I love my job, my whole existence is not about my job. And that I feel like that is not the sole place where my legacy should be left. Where like people remember me as like that girl who, you know, did was a great consultant. Like if we're having the conversation of like how people remember me, it's like, that's not it, you know? And then what you just were talking about in terms of like how both it's capitalistic, but also highly classist to focus solely on the work that we do and how some people have more options because they can choose work that is ascribed with more value than compared to other people. I was also thinking about this idea of like legacy connected to, you know, finding yourself. You know, a lot of the times we have these like tropes, rightfully so, we scoff at those tropes of like the privileged white, like thin cis woman who goes to like escape to somewhere tropical or exotic on like some eat, pray, love shit. She's like, you know, escaping the confines of her day to day drab life to go on, like live on the edge in like the dark continent or in Asia or in South America or something. And I think about just sort of the realities of like travel. Given COVID, travel is kind of impossible for most of us. And how people oftentimes will create this idea of like legacy being having like experienced all these things. But it's like that's also attached to a hell of a lot of privilege. And it's hella colonialist too, a lot of the times. It's like going somewhere, taking something back, like being transformed by realizing how much, you know, better off your life is somewhere else, like back home because you saw how people were impoverished, that kind of thing. So I kind of feel like sometimes legacy and sort of who we are, the process by which we get there is oftentimes like touched and not touched, but like contaminated or at least impacted in a more neutral sense by like capitalism, colonialism, individualism, and even the notion of, like, you know, being known, like being the star of the show, being a trailblazer, being the first, insert word, being famous, having money, like winning everything, like all of those pieces, I think, are so tied to the ways that we oftentimes talk about legacy. It's kind of icky. It's really icky.
Totally. And so often I feel like, you know, that longing for fame is really a longing for love, you know, and a misguided desire for, like, validation and love of some kind, even though that's never going to give it to you. But I think a lot of times people have a lack within ourselves, and that's why we seek that. Because I used to want to be famous also, and it was absolutely from a similar lack within myself of feeling loved and feeling worthy. And so I was really craving, I felt like that, you know, that's how I would know that I was, like, special or was doing something worthwhile, was by kind of getting that mass approval, which obviously is not what fame is really like, which is why so many people, you see them crash and burn. So I think fame can come naturally from doing something that gives you purpose, but when that's what you're seeking, I feel like there's a lot beneath that.
Yeah. I'm curious, because you just said that having similar experiences when you were younger as me, mm-hmm. as like wanting mm-hmm. to be known. I guess I'm wanting to know from you, when did that change? At what point did you realize that, like, that wasn't what you wanted anymore? Did that feel unattainable to you?
I think similar to you, I had that desire for, like, expression, and I did love, like, performing, and I loved the arts. So
really? I did not know this about you.
Yeah. People are always, who meet me now, are surprised by that. But that was, like, what it was all about when I was a kid. And so because of that, I wanted to be famous. But I think even after I was old enough to know that I was never going to be in, like, the entertainment industry, I still did crave that fame. And I thought, oh, maybe I'll write books that will get to that level, or, you know, things like that. And I think, honestly, I think it's only been in the last, even I would say, few years, because even once I was like, okay, I'm probably never going to write books that are on that level, I used to be like, okay, well, maybe I'll be like a social media kind of, you know, I'll have like that kind of fame for some of my ideas and things like that. And I think only in the last few years, I think maybe the more I've found purpose and fulfillment in the work that I am doing, the less I was craving that. Because I think now, even the idea of social media stardom, like, I still can, like, fall into the trap of, you know, especially like on the podcast, being like, oh, this post only got so many likes, so maybe it wasn't good enough, and how can I, like, make it better, and that kind of thing, like needing that or wanting that external validation in that way. But, like, I almost never post on my personal, because I'm like, I just have no desire to be seen in that way. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think there can be lots of great reasons to want that. But for me, I think I've found purpose in other ways. And so the desire just kind of went away on its own.
That resonates a lot with me. I think I've had the same experience of, like, once you know your purpose and kind of the lane in which you want to be in, suddenly it feels like the need to be seen by people that you don't know, that, you know, people that you're never going to really meet, it kind of is less prioritized. And you know what I mean? Like, I just don't feel like that is, maybe it's that I don't feel it's attainable. And maybe in some ways for myself, I don't feel like it's like a noble calling for me. And there's obviously some judgment there. Like, I'm not a perfect person. Like, I appreciate you being like, for some people that's great. But for me, I'm just kind of like, if that was the energy that I was embodying, and I was even saying earlier before we started this call or before we started this episode, about my partner and how, like, averse he is to just being in the spotlight at all. And I understand that to a large extent, but I still have those, you know, blips of like, oh yeah, how many likes did this thing mm-hmm. get? Or how, you know, how was that thing that I shared perceived, or, you know, that kind of thing. But it's definitely not on the forefront of what adds value to my life or how I feel like, yeah, I'm doing a good job is about, like, likes. You know what I mean? But it's so hard because of social media.
It is. It makes it really, really hard because it is. There's these like metrics. And so
literally.
Literally. So it makes it hard to just focus on the feeling. But so I'm curious. So do you feel like now if you somehow could get like, I don't know what's a lot now. Is it 50,000 followers on your personal or 100,000 followers or whatever? Is that something that you think you would want or enjoy? Or do you feel like...
No. I think I would rather... I like the idea of what my partner Nolan said, which is I want to be known. I want to be known for my work. I want to be known for the things that I have like... The space that I've created for people. I want the things that I have said to like impact people. But I don't want to be... I want the impact to be felt, but I don't want to be attached to it, if that makes sense. Like, I don't need that. Mm-hmm. I find that to be kind of scary because, and this is something that I've actually struggled with a lot with my business. I think I've talked to you about this in some extent, which is kind of like that people would look to you and sort of you are creating a platform for yourself while people are platforming you too. And like being seen in that type of way, I just think... I'm so frightened by that almost. Like I always end up feeling like, I'm scared that means that I have to be perfect. Mm-hmm. And I think as I've continued to explore sort of like what is my purpose and like what are my gifts or my talents or whatever, I know that my talent isn't performance. And by performance, I don't mean like songwriting. I mean like performing myself to other people. Like I know that I need to just be able to be myself. And I have been told, because I'm grateful for this, that I do a good job of modeling behaviors that I want, you know, like if I'm like, hey, you know, I'm just like open to my friends and they're like, oh, thanks for like being open. It makes me feel like I can be open. I'm like, great, cool. Hopefully you can take that into wherever else you need to take that into. But it wasn't about me. It was about like how I showed up in that space. And that was like impactful to somebody, but it wasn't me. Anyone else could have done the same thing and it could have been impactful. So I'd rather be known for how many people feel than like, my je ne sais quoi or like my star quality. I'm just kind of like, because people's opinions are fickle. And that's the thing. Like you have to, you're relying on the opinions of other people. And I value the opinions of people who are like my friends, like you. I want you to be like, Nicole has a je ne sais quoi and I love her for that. But I don't really want to like put all that power in the hands of people who don't know me and who will never personally know me. You know what I mean?
Totally. But it is interesting, like the difference between the work and you, because I think, we're talking about not needing to be known, but we are sitting here with microphones.
I know, right?
But again, it is like because of the work, like we don't have episodes where like we only talk about our life. Not that there's anything wrong with that. Again, there's great podcasts where people do that.
I love those.
And we use our lives as well as fodder for the podcast as well. But it's been interesting that now there have been people, it's happened a little bit in person, not so much because of the pandemic, but we'll get DMs from people that we don't know who will say that certain episodes or the podcast in general meant something to them. And that's like a really lovely feeling. And I think it's really nice to have that when I'm not doing it for that, you know, like I do it because what we talk about and what we're trying to do with the podcast is important to me. And I really enjoy doing it with you. And so then to also then have people say the work means something, I think is really wonderful, but it feels very different, I think, than the kind of like attention I craved before. Cause I'm not craving for anybody to tell me I'm amazing, you know, which I don't think is what is being said. Like, I don't take it that way and I don't need it to be that way. And I don't want it to be that way. And this feels a lot better.
Yeah. Yeah. As you were speaking, I was like thinking about the ways that legacy, and you said this earlier, and I want to start talking about it now, is like legacy is for me now is about relationships. Like it's about relationships and how I make people feel. It's less about like a product or like an output or like a singular, like I achieved this thing. It's like, how can I show up and be that ripple? Like you were saying earlier, like what is that ripple effect that I might be having on somebody just by my presence? Mm-hmm. And it might be a presence that I can uniquely embody, or maybe something that you could, like anyone could, right? Like I find that to be so much more valuable in terms of like conceptualizing what legacy feels like, or what, if I were talking, boiling it down to like how people talk about me when I'm gone, I hope that they would be like, she made me feel like great and like think about stuff. Or like she said some things that I thought were like really, that really affirmed me. Like those things make me feel like that lights me up. Like that's the stuff that is important to me.
Yeah, it was so interesting. A while back, I don't remember why we were having this conversation, but I was saying to Mal that I felt like healing in color, if I had any kind of legacy, it would be that, because it's like this thing that exists and people can use it. And I can, it's like kind of obvious, I guess, how it benefits them. And, you know, they were like, not to take away from that, but they were like, I think the work that you do in your therapy practice, and I think we could expand that to how we are with our friends and coworkers and our families and just the people around us. They're like, to me, that is the bigger legacy or the bigger impact, because the way you are with people, it's like that can be so transformational and it ripples outwards in ways that like, yes, like a kind of tangible resource is like a great thing, but the impact you can have in how you are with another human is so much more transformational. And I mean, I can't argue with that. I think it's just like, yeah, again, like harder to measure maybe. So it's like, maybe I'm making a difference with people around me, but who knows? Like how would I necessarily know? I mean, people can tell you, but regardless, I think sometimes it is easier to fall back on like the metrics, the numbers, you know, I can look and see how many people, you know, thousands of people were on the Healing in Color website. And that's a lot easier than seeing like the difference that a relationship I have, how that makes a difference to that person and their lives. Like you, it's harder to grasp, you know?
Yeah. It's like we focus so much more on the tangible material things as opposed to the immaterial sort of invisible stuff. Like if you can't touch it, like, is it even real? You know, like, and I think that it's interesting. So I want to share a quote because it's really hinging off of what you just said. And this is what Layla speaks to in this video that I was talking about. And she says, legacy means that your life matters. The way that we show up in the world has a direct impact on generations that come after us through our actions, whether those actions and the way we live in our lives was conscious or intentional and chosen or not. And I was thinking about that, like, it's about people. It sounds like that's what you're saying too. It's about like how you make people feel, how you're able to show up and be yourself and maybe model what that is like for you so that others can do the same thing as well. And I like this piece about our impact on other generations. And she talks a lot about the fact that being an ancestor doesn't mean, it's not just about like having children, because I think a lot of the times we like reduce that to like blood relatives and things like that. But she was talking about like recognizing that there are going to be people in generations that come after us, and there are people in generations that came before us, whether they're related to us or not. I love the idea of actions impacting people, whether we choose to consciously recognize those actions as impactful or if we're kind of just going through our day to day. And then she shares something else, and she writes, or rather she says, being a good ancestor doesn't mean having achievements, becoming an icon or a public figure, but recognizing your life matters, the impact on the world is real, whether it's on 6 people or 6 million people, and that we have a choice on whether we want to intentionally choose what that impact may be, or if we're going to go through our daily lives and hope for the best. So I guess I'm curious about that choice piece, because I think that I was with her and then I was like, oh, but like some people... No, I'm still with her. I think the challenging piece is kind of like, not everybody has a choice when it comes to like their sort of material world. Like not everybody has the same options to choose. But it's still the case that like, no matter where you are, you still have some ability to choose to show up with care or show up with, you know, being able to dignify other people or being able to respect other people or not. Like, and I guess I'm, yeah, I'm curious what your thoughts are about like choice when it comes to impact.
Yeah, I think that when we talk about choice, it always gets so tricky because we obviously have a lot of choices, but we sometimes overestimate our own choices. And I think that's a function of individualism and a lot of other things that we tend to see ourselves as more separate from our context than we maybe are. But I like the way that she talked about how it's not about being an icon or a public figure, because I do think that how we show up in the world around us every day really matters. You know, this is such a weird example. Something that just came to my mind is when I was serving and I found that job so stressful. I can't overstate how stressful that job was for me and how much it impacted my life. And how there's, you know, always customers that are like being rude to you or demeaning or getting mad at you for things that are not your fault. And I remember one time in the summer, so I had like a million tables and it was just so intense. And I had gone up to a table and taken their drink order, and then I had done a million other things. And then I guess I lost sight of the fact that I'd taken their drink order. So I went back and like started to ask them again. And then as I got it out, realized, oh my God, I already did this. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'll be right back. Yes. And I like ran away, like got the drinks really quickly and like came back and was like, I'm so sorry. Like, here they are. And they were so chill and they were like, it's totally fine. They're like, if that's the worst thing that happens in a day, it's a pretty good day. And then they were just like so sweet to me the whole time. Wow. And then they like told a story of like, because they asked where I was from, and then it turned out they had like been there. Then they were telling the story of like being next to somebody on a train or something as part of this trip, and they ended up like giving her advice about like her nursing career because like their daughter was a nurse or like something, like, and it was just like the cutest thing. Right. And I'm like, you two are just like the cutest human beings that are just so sweet and loving to everybody around you. And I still think about that because it was just like, again, in those moments where it's so easy to be like, oh my God, I fucked this up. I'm so stupid. Mm. Like, they're going to be so mad and all of this. And they're just so kind. And something that small can make such an impact on somebody's life, right? So it's like, you could have any job, you could be anybody, and you can choose to be kind. And that can actually really make a difference.
Yeah. And it's like, it's that experience stuck with you for so, like, it's still with you, right?
Yeah.
And it makes me think of, I've had similar, that is so classic in the weeds as a server, just like, I don't even know if I've asked you this question, let me just go, oh, sorry, you're gonna get mad at me.
I still have serving nightmares. I quit
years ago.
Yeah.
I have had the same. We could swap stories. I was gonna say, like, when you recall the way that you were treated in that moment, I feel like it can stand as such a great like testament for like the next time when somebody, you know, fucks up and like doesn't do what they're supposed to do. And you can kind of draw from like, remember that one time that I fucked up like royally and how chill that couple was? Like, how can I embody that same response to this person who clearly feels like a ton of stress, you know? And they're like, it's, if I blow up at them, it's going to ruin their day and maybe make them really like, maybe it's like the icing, the cherry on top of like a horrific day. And I think as we were talking about how legacy is so tied to impact on people and relationships, I think a question that we always ask ourselves, like I'm saying you and I in general, is like, how do I show up for people? Like, how am I showing up in my day to day? And then more meta is like, how am I showing up for the things that I care about? Like, if I really do care about climate crisis or the endless amount of things that our societies are being forced to address, and for a lot of us who are also surviving systems, we're like surviving systems and fighting against these pieces. It's like, what am I willing to give to the people, the communities, the causes that I care about? And then another piece that I think connected to redefining what legacy means is also, what am I learning? Like, what am I bringing with me along? And so Layla talks about this metaphor of being a bridge, which I think is really interesting. And she describes herself as, she's like, I'm the bridge that connects my parents' generation and my children's generation. She's like, I'm in the middle. I'm the middle point between the people who have come before and the people who are coming after. And she says, a bridge is important because it's how we get from one side to the other. And I keep thinking about sort of like, what's my role? Like, how am I connecting the things that have happened in the past to like the potential future? And how do I choose to show up in frantic moments, in like moments where I might want to be more frantic because it's the energy that I've been receiving? How can I choose differently? You know, how can I choose to like be that different sort of energy in the room, for example, that shifts things and like creates new possibilities?
That reminds me of the nap ministry and the way they talk about how there's always time to rest. You know, you can close your eyes for 10 seconds, things like that. Right. It just made me think of that, about the ways that there is always choice. There are always ways that you can choose how to show up in a particular moment. And it might be within like a more limited or more expansive range of choices. But I think it is really empowering to start to think about, just the different things you can choose to bring to any moment.
Yeah.
And how it doesn't have to be at work, you know, or it doesn't have to be on a public stage, but what are the things that you're bringing with you even to the conversation with your friend? And what is the impact there? And like that, I think, again, it's like we're talking about the ripple, right? It's like the things that have impacted me that I've learned from, and then I get to bring that to this moment, and that's like then goes to you, and then you get to bring it to another moment if you choose to. I feel like it's hard to let go of the credit, you know, like, because these are the kinds of things where it's like, you might never know what your legacy is then, right? Because it's like snaking out so far past you that like, you don't see it yourself. So you don't get the recognition, you don't get the credit, but like, you can feel it. And that has to be enough, you know, even feeling it just in this moment with you, and then trusting that that'll go where it needs to go. I don't know.
Exactly. Yeah. And Layla talks about seeing ourselves as part of the whole story of humanity and understanding that, you know, my liberation is linked with the liberation of those who came before and those who are going to come after I'm gone. And when it's like after I'm gone, to your point, you said earlier, is like, I'm going to be dead. Like, I have to trust that the way that I was able to show up impacted people in a way, not enough people, because I don't think it's about quantity. Mm-hmm. I think it's about the quality of how we're able to show up. And, you know, to Layla's point, she's like, it's not about people, like, it's not about numbers. It's like 6 people or 6 million people. I hold on to that sort of seeing ourselves as part of the story of humanity, as part of a bigger thing. Mm-hmm. I think when we start to see that, we begin to like command more authority in those ripple, like those teeny weeny ripple impacts. Like suddenly they're like big tidal waves because we're like talking about our closest circle. You know what I mean? In the grand scheme of humanity, maybe it'll be teeny weenies, but amongst the people who we're brushing up against on a day to day, like those could be so impactful.
Totally. And I also really appreciate how, you know, earlier you were saying how she said it's not just about if you have children, you know, and being a good ancestor in that way. Because when you're talking about, you know, the whole story of humanity, it's like, especially as somebody who doesn't want children, I think it's really nice to sort of have this framing of it where it's like, okay, but you're still here and you're a part of the world. And so what you do and how you impact the world and your just your community around you will impact the people who come after you, whether they're your direct descendants or not. The same way we've been, you know, so many of us have been so impacted by so many people who came before us who are not related to us by blood.
Totally. Yes. Thank you for that. And yeah, I was going to actually ask you, how does that make you feel specifically about the piece on, you know, legacy is not just about blood? Because I think it is really important to unfuck our minds about the, like, I don't know, the way that we really privilege baby making in the nuclear family, and how we completely, I think a lot of the times, disconnect ourselves from like other ways of
family and kinship and impact and relationship that is beyond that, or how that can be integrated with nuclear families if that's what we choose to create for ourselves. So yeah, I'm glad that that resonated for you, because I certainly feel like even for people who are not, you know, part of my nuclear family, and as a person who wants to have kids, and I really want to have kids because I'm so excited at the opportunity to like help bring a little human into the world to become their own great ancestor to other generations after them. But also, I'm in relationship with you. I'm in relationship. I have friends, right? I have so many different types of relationships beyond the nuclear family. And those are so important to me. Like, they're so sacred to me. I bring a lot of care and intention to them as I would to my relationship with my partner. You know what I mean? And so I think in the notion of like legacy beyond the sort of boundaries of nuclear family, like there's so much more room beyond that. And a couple of questions actually that Leila offers. What is my role here in this lifetime? What am I supposed to be doing? What bricks should I be laying? What foundations am I supposed to be setting? How can I choose to leave a legacy of healing and liberation for those who are coming after me? Mm-hmm. And you know me, I love reflection questions. I love being able to be like, what is my role here? But I think what I'm taking from these questions, and especially around like, what am I supposed to be doing? I think that's challenging sometimes, because we're like, okay, like there's a right answer. Like there's a specific answer that I need to solve in order for me to know what I'm supposed to be doing. And inevitably then we're stuck in the cycle of like, it's about my job. Yeah. That's my life's calling, you know, it's about work or whatever. But I think as we talked about relationships being legacy, values, we talk about values all the time, but values also being part of our legacy, and having the values be the stand-in for supposed to. Not like, you know, what am I supposed to be doing? I'm supposed to be, I don't know, an accountant. It's like, what am I supposed to be doing? I'm supposed to be showing up with care. Like, mm-hmm. That is the supposed to. Does that make mm-hmm. sense? Does that resonate for you?
It does.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I feel like for me, that's the biggest, when I think about the influence of my family of origin on the person I am today, because there's a lot of ways that I'm very different than the family culture that I grew up in, but I definitely think a lot about the values, because I think there was a value of justice, even though how we would, what we think that looks like is maybe very different, but also just values and morality as being sort of the guiding force of life, you know, like I think that is just very much how what we do in the world, it was through that lens, you know, and like not just what we do for work, maybe that even less than other things, but just that like when we decide, you know, the choices that we make day to day and how we are with people, that that's guided by values, I think has been a big impression that's been left on me. So, I mean, I think that's a pretty great legacy.
Hey everyone, it's Nick.
And Lala.
If you've been listening to Scene and you like what you hear,
please share us with your friends.
Subscribe to the podcast.
Follow us on Instagram at Scene the Podcast.
Write a review and just tell us what you think.
And help make this work sustainable by supporting Scene the Podcast on Patreon.
We need our beautiful community, and we cannot do this without you.